Jim's is Dr.
Jim?
Well,
Okay,
somebody
go
else comment, somebody else want to jump in before I jump in? All right. To me, the weakness in the morning drive, I mean, again, I'm not, I know that in California and Berkeley, they have a pretty good morning drive show. Sabrina, I'm pretty sure you guys are going to get Nielsen soon, or you have already, so I'd be curious to see what those are. But anyway, you know, that's, I think, where a lot of the volunteer energy, when you look at the grids that used to exist in these stations, and now I'm talking about New York because I'm more familiar with BAI's grid, you know, you had people doing basically radio documentaries. I mean, the reportage from the South and the civil rights movement, the people going to, you know, the guy who went to Vietnam in the 60s, he later wound up working for Walter Cronkite for years. He was working in his TV operation. You know, you had a lot of very talented people. And that is where there are still lots of young, talented people doing their production through digital forms. Because in the FM was like sort of cutting edge in the 60s. It's no longer perceived like that by Generation Z and millennials, particularly Generation Z. They're even more trending into not listening to terrestrial radio. So part of where I think the niche programming can go is that it can be done through digital forms. You know, you can, and you can attract the same kind of audience or even more through that form, because people are doing it already. They've been doing it now for 15, 20 years increasingly, and they're not waiting for, you know, getting permission from the Pacifica Radio Foundation to do their work. So that's the energy we have to figure out how to align with, collaborate with, ally with, not dominate, or, you know, because there's no, you know, there's no, it's ridiculous for us to even, you know, some of these older producers act like they're the cat's meow, and that's ridiculous. There's a lot of young energy going on out there, and we just have to sit there and work with it. Now, many years ago, you and I, Grace, had a discussion about video games. In a way, that's why that Games for Change thing came up, because, you know, I'm saying to myself, well, why not put together a pretty hip show on video games? And not just a stupid show, but, you know, like, okay, here's the latest version of some shoot 'em up show, but deal with the question of what, you know, all the cultural aspects that come from that, you know, and that has a huge audience. I had to interview years ago, I was trying to do for television, the people who did that show, Grand Theft, the video game Grand Theft Auto. And they would not let me talk to the designers who were literally about 5 to 10 blocks away from where I was doing the TV show. I had to talk to people in California. But these shows have huge audiences. And it's a whole ballgame out there that we have yet to exploit intelligently. So one could do specials. Podcasts are generally done in limited series. You know, like, I mean, sometimes they're done in 4 or 5 episodes or 6 episodes, and they're produced radio. They're basically produced radio. So one could do it like that. And what they were telling me at the conference when I was listening to all these commercial guys talk, what they would do was iHeartRadio would put a podcast on. Remember, we're talking about huge audiences, iHeartRadio. And they would put a first episode on terrestrial radio across the network. And they'd do that in 150 to 160 stations simultaneously. Then they would drive that terrestrial audience to listen to the 4 or 5 or 6 shows that they're offering. Now, if you look at MSNBC, Rachel Maddow did a whole thing on Spiro Agnew. With the same kind of, you know, she has a huge, she has the largest, she had
Bagman.
The largest audience of any of the shows. She lost a little bit because of the Mueller report, but it looks like that's coming back. But still, she had a pretty good built-in audience through her ability to reach out through their couple million people that listen to MSNBC. But those are the kind of things we could do. We could do specials. We could do specials that are integral to the stations, and then they could be sent vertically and horizontally across the whole country. Another thing I think we could do is reach out to people in Europe and elsewhere where they're doing highly produced radio. We could reach out to people in Africa. There's all sorts of things we can do now with the digital form of communication we could not do before easily. And so I think there's just tons and tons of possibilities that we haven't thought about. And we just have to kick ass with these local – the gatekeepers have to, you know, lower the goddamn gates as far as I'm concerned. They should blow – we should blow the gates up. You know, blow the gates up. Just throw – go right through them. The hell with it with a goddamn truck. Because I'm tired of this nonsense. You know,
I understand what you're saying, Jim, but realistically, I mean, if you look at what you know, the difficulty that Tom is having with his May Day event just to get links onto pages. So I think there needs to be, I think we have to think constructively and realistically about how to make this possible. So for instance, you know, when I'm looking at a network like the Young Turks, they have a whole podcast system in which they have different shows that are regular shows. They do specials. A lot of people have spun off from there as well because there's all this interpersonal politics. But they make a considerable amount of money with their network online. And so I would envision this function as, you know, a Pacifica having a part of its network as this online podcasting system that each of the five stations and the affiliates could feed into, and then it could be cross-pollinated through the stations. But realistically, it's going to be very piecemeal if it's not done in a way that has its own staffing and its own budgeting and its own capacity to raise money. I think that's the way to make it real. The reason that the affiliate program is real because it has a system of fundraising. It's different because each station pays into it. But on podcasting online, we could have people paying a dollar a podcast or whatever it is, or subscribing for specialty programs, like maybe having the specials in the open part of it that anyone has access to, and then they would subscribe for the rest of that series. So, I mean, there's so much we could do with it if it's freestanding, and then the various stations could take links to whatever they want to link to their stations. And I don't see it happening in another way, because just looking at the way the stations function, looking at the way the boards function, I just think that there are good ideas that are going to fall under the bus if we don't create a structure to contain it. So I think that's my opinion, that has to be an important part of making this work. Mm. Ultimately, I'm not saying that we couldn't do piecemeal stuff up until that point, but I think that there needs to be a process of really thinking about this and putting all these best practices together, as Maxie would say, on how to do a podcast network for Pacifica that all of the stations and the affiliates could have access to and participate in, so that, you know, people would just submit their proposals to this structure, and there needs to be someone there who could manage it. So it needs to be managed in a way that it has full attention from somebody in order to really make it work. Yeah, Tommy.
You're here.
Yeah, I got a family situation here. I'm going to have to drop off, but I just sent Cliff Franklin's phone number and his email. I copied you also, and hopefully you can get all of you can get coordinated for Mayday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
Thanks,
good luck.
All right. Take care.
Well, one thing. Sabrina, did you want to comment? I heard your voice, but I wasn't sure.
No. I was just echoing what you were saying. Yeah, the containment needs to be created. The type of containment, the structure behind it. So that it can be implemented in a solid way. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't think it's something that's going to be that difficult, but it definitely needs the attention as it comes out of this incubation period. And, and also, as far as with the affiliates, the way the affiliates are structured or were structured and are structured now after the changes, I don't see how, I think the podcasting can be done in a way where it could be a paid position through central services.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking out loud right now, but I don't see how that can't be a possibility, especially if that's the way the affiliates got started. And
yeah,
it'll take off from there. You know what I mean? I mean, there's a lot that we have to offer. There's so much history at each station. And then we have PRA as well. So that can be a really big draw for folks, you know, especially when we go into these commemorative days, you know, like the Holocaust Day, Black History Month, so forth and so on. So, I don't know, just thinking out loud, I think it's something that we can do. We can structure it like the affiliates are structured, we're structured, our structure. And I think we need to get it off the ground because that is definitely a huge source of income for Pacifica as a whole. Very important.
Yeah, I think it could make a tremendous difference. Jim, did you want to jump back in?
Well, one thing I was wondering about was how the FCC rules apply on podcasts. Because
they don't.
I know
I don't think they do.
I know.
Sorry.
That's,
sorry.
That's the thing. Because the kids I know, my son, he listens to the Turks all the time. He listens to... And of course, they're breaking the 7 dirty word rule all the time, and all these podcasters do that. So that's an interesting thing because they're, you know, I know that we're probably going to face a problem like that down the road where the FCC is going to come storming into all this, probably sooner than we think. But that's something to me that's interesting because some of these really popular podcasts like Young Turks and all that, we can't put it on the air. Because they have to put it on delay. But if we were working with them, we could be saying, or some podcast like that, we could be saying, here you could check it out. You know, we have an agreement with them. I mean, the mechanics of how it would be set up is something, you know, again, I don't know how that would work financially. But I also think that we have one thing we could do right now. Is we could be going to – I could be going into the podcast companies in New York that already exist. There are a lot of them. And I could say, look, guys, we need your help. Civica needs your advice and help about how we could set up an alternative podcast system. It's not to compete with you because we know you guys are trying to monitor. You know, they're looking for podcasts that have 50,000 to 100,000 downloads a month. There's no show that we have except maybe Democracy Now! That approaches that – kind of audience a month or you know that's where the money's going to. So the kind of shows that we're talking about, the niche shows, which I agree are important, because when we have this whole criticism about patchwork programming, there's part of me that agrees to that, but on the other hand, I know that some of the patchwork programming has been really interesting and no one else would ever put it on the air. So what are we going to do? We're going to throw that all down the tubes and then just go to strip programming, which has its strong points. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, I do think that the solution to people getting thrown off the air because nobody's listening to them in a way, or their niche programming doesn't have enough people listening to it, is that, or if they're doing the mission, then, you know, what's the, I mean, there are interesting dilemmas that you get, but pushing it into digital means of communication, I think, is partly a solution, because then the show is still intact. It, you know, people just, they just want to get up behind that mic on terrestrial radio all the time, but there's a lot of people out there listening to things that aren't on terrestrial radio, and that's where I think we need to go. And I also think it'd be useful at each station. I remember when Mitchell Cohn brought in that talent show of teenagers who came in and did their music and oral poetry. Frankly, we should be doing stuff like that every couple of months with teenagers, because who the hell is going to replace us? I mean, you know, like really, I mean, you know, like who's going to, we need young people in. We need young kids coming in, and we're not allowing that. We're not providing those opportunities for them. And this particular event he did, the kids themselves took control of it. So those of you who grew up in New York know that there are specialized high schools like Stuyvesant. These were kids from music and art. It's now LaGuardia Performing Arts. They brought all their friends from private schools and from public high schools in Brooklyn, Queens, and the Bronx. So you had all these kids there doing their thing, and it was awe-inspiring. That's the kind of stuff we need to cultivate, and that, by the way, was where a gatekeeper interfered, and we was not going to allow it to happen until Mitchell intervened, and with great fortitude, pulled it off. But why should that not be happening all the time? You know, that kind of stuff. It's ridiculous. And other places in New York City are doing it. You know, the community, the BRIC outfit, it's actually run by a former general manager of BAI, Tony Riddle. They're doing it all the time out there. So these are
kind of. And actually, that's one cable station that the door has been open for us to work with without the caveat that we would have to give it away the store.
Right, exactly. And that's where working with these local, and you know, and I should add, the person who filmed the event at Columbia, the events that had to do with Central America, you know, he does a show regularly for Manhattan Neighbor Network. He's been doing it for 25 years, but he's always been a friend of the station, and he's always somebody who, you know, if we could provide a little bit of revenue to pay guys, you know, we could be getting some great content to share with everybody else. And what also I got from working with Radio Montez, those guys are cooperating with internet radio stations in Europe. They cooperate with internet radio stations that do Pacifica type, that have essentially the same ethos as the Pacifica station, except they're in Berlin. They're in Amsterdam. They're in London. So why don't we be cooperating with these kind of guys? You never know what we're going to get. You know, and, you know, and finally, I met this weekend, I listened to a conference at Columbia called The End of Empire, and there was a young British scholar who's just come from to Johns Hopkins. He gave the most interesting rap from a black nationalist perspective of Brexit I've ever heard. So I said to myself, you know, this, I said to him, man, you know, like, we should have you, I'd really like to hear you talk to a large audience out at the Commons, or make his thoughts available to the national audience, because he did one hell of analysis on Brexit, and he's smart as hell. So these are the kind of things we could be doing that we're not doing, and we could broaden our audiences incrementally.
Okay. Nice. Anyone else want to speak on podcasting? Okay, well, that's good. The one thing that I would really say is that I think that the next committee, I'm hoping, will really work on building the structure for these things to happen, because otherwise they'll remain as ideas and not be executed and put into place. So to me, that is a greater priority than the ideas themselves. So so we've completed our agenda for today. Does anyone else want to add a final thought or comment before we adjourn? I would ask if we're going to meet again. If so, we need to put it on the agenda for 2 weeks from tonight. There may be a new committee by then, but we could still put it on the agenda.
Okay. I agree with that. Point of information, Catherine?
Yeah.
Is it a conflict of interest if a program director at one of the individual units has their own show or has created their own show after becoming interim or permanent program director?
I don't think so. I think it's been a longstanding tradition at Pacifica that program directors have shows. That's certainly been the case in New York, maybe not recently, but in the far past. Samori Marksman, the program director, created a daily show, but it had different hosts in addition to him, and it was political analysis, and it was a very powerful show. So it depends. I mean, if it's a vanity show, I might personally have problems with it, but I don't think it's a conflict of interest necessarily.
Thank you. Anybody else want to weigh in on that, since we don't have a solid policy?
Grace, you have an idea about that? Are you there, Grace?
Whether a program director should be on the air?
Yeah.
I don't think there's any rule against it, but I think a program director should be doing the job of being a program director. And that's really important. And I think we have not really seen program directors. I don't know that program directors really need to. It's a big job at our stations, and it's an important job. So I don't know if the program director is there to grandstand and produce his or her own show. How much is that going to detract from their doing their job of program director?
Mm.
That would be the question.
Right.
Yeah. I agree with that. It would have to be, I mean, if you have a successful program director, it's less of a problem than if you have an unsuccessful one. I think that it may be that the network needs separate directors to handle the fundraising. Our program directors in the past did both and did both successfully, but that doesn't seem to be happening now.
Mm-hmm. Cliff, do you have an opinion about that in Washington?
No, we still have an interim, which I think we've had for 2 or 3 years now, and it's creating a problem. I did want to bring up something a question that maybe we could answer at the next meeting, but we're on the verge of introducing HD here in D.C. We're being wired right now. It'll come into full flower sometime this year, maybe a month from now, maybe 3 or 4 months from now, and we will have several channels. We're pushing, hopefully, for maybe a jazz channel, a public affairs channel, et cetera, and I was wondering whether the other stations have had this and whether you'll have multiple channels. I don't know that much about HD, but anyway, that's what we're doing here. But I thought maybe I could get a feedback at the next meeting as to what other stations are involved with this.
Okay.
It's also
something to talk about if that happens, what's possible.
Yeah. Jim to the stack.
Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
I think in New York we have that possibility right now. The reason why they're not doing it is because, well, obviously they're overwhelmed with everything else. But, you know, HD, I think KPFT is the one station where they've really explored that.
But now that you can go online and do all these other things, I think that's one of the reasons why HD, I don't think, is properly exploited the way they thought it would be. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I know to, on the program director thing, Andrew Phillips used to do a show, but he did a show from 10 to 11 at night. So it was at a time where it wasn't really interfering with the normal grid. And I think what he did was a radio art show, because he was at that time teaching sound track design at NYU Film School. But one thing, though, I think is important for we've not talked about is that the general manager and the PD do frequent report to the listeners. In other words, bring the listeners on. We know that a lot of people will self-select a call, but I always felt that that was a good thing that Pacifica Radio Station did, that they'd have the GM and the PD sit there and take a lot of SHIT from people, but it was a good thing. And I just don't think that it's done frequently enough. I know in New York it isn't done frequently enough, and it should be. It should be done at every station. And I think that that's where a PD should really be getting as much feedback and the GM from the public and the listeners as much as possible, all the time. It's a real intense interaction, and you know, too often they retreat into a bunker and don't come out.
This is Grace.
Thank you.
I have something to say.
Yes, Grace.
I believe that Houston KPFT does have an HD channel. Getting back to podcasting and those types of subjects, I think that a really good analysis done by this committee or another committee of what the needs are of our listening audience would be very helpful. So, for instance, per the California Broadcasters Association, which is an incredibly good website that has a lot of factual information, most of our Southern California listeners listen, more than 60% listen away from the home. So that's usually in the car, you know. And not all, and podcasts, statistically speaking, terrestrial radio listenership is far higher than podcast listenership. The other thing is, what are the needs of the audience? So you have intellectual workers, accountants, computer programmers, that type of worker. They're not going to be able to really, most of them can't really listen to a news show or an in-depth interview, but they can listen to music online at work with using their headphones. So that, you know, we need to find out what are the needs. Podcasting, when you need an internet interface, a lot of people don't want to spend the time, are very, very, very busy. I've talked to a few younger people recently, and they don't have the 5 or 10 minutes it might take to DJ podcasts for themselves. And it's not really easy to do that if you're in a car. Now, it may be easier for other people. What would be the breakdown of people who want to spend the time to DJ podcasts for themselves? So, for instance, people on the Long Island Railroad and the subways, where there's not going to be good terrestrial radio ability to listen to terrestrial radio, I assume. Are they podcast listeners, or are they doing something else? Are they listening to nothing? Are they reading? I mean, you tell me. You're in New York City. We have mostly a car culture here in Southern California. And even with our metro, you know, you can hear terrestrial radio. But in New York, what do people do who are on the subway or in when they're commuting or on the Long Island Railroad? Do they listen to podcasts? What do they do? What are their needs?
Well, this is Captain. They're on their phone.
Right, exactly. It's the same here in
the
Bay Area.
As long as you're in the station, you can get free streaming. You can get on the internet free as long as you're not traveling through the tunnels. Some of the buses have, you can get online on some of the buses, but most people can get online with their phones as long as they're outside, so that's easy to do. I would say that people are very much attached to their phones. And the advantage of podcasting really is that you can download a show onto the phone and
right.
listen to it in the subway or at your convenience. That's really the advantage of podcasting. So a person may download a show, listen, then they'll eliminate it, download the next show, because they don't want to keep it on the phone because it takes all the memory. But podcasting, what that does is it gives you the convenience of listening whenever you choose.
Well, that's a great question, Grace, because that would be the kind of question that one could get if one is reaching out to a number of podcast companies. I'm sure that in New York, they have a lot of market research done on that particular question. Now, what I see on the subway, because I take the subway, I'm in the subway, it's a couple of hours a day, so I'm watching people do stuff. They are watching movies on their phones. They are, I don't know what they're listening to. It's an interesting question. And that gets into the question of how YouTube, in particular, when you look at the younger surveys, I go up to Pew all the time and read all that stuff. They have a very useful thing for everybody to listen to read. They do, at Pew Polling, they do a lot of work on social media, how people are absorbing social media. And I've sent stuff out to the people in this committee at times, the links. And that seems to be very powerful with younger people, with Generation Z folks and millennials. They will go to YouTube, and certainly YouTube is the main source of new music for them. And then the question of when you juxtapose that with what we see from the statistics of listenership at Pacifica stations, they generally listen in Pacifica stations at home to radio. I know in New York that's the case, and I've seen the stats in other stations. That is very significant, because that says that they're not necessarily listening to radio when they're driving a car. So there's a whole audience that we're not getting as much as we could, because, you know, I personally think that that has to do with how the morning show is structured. The morning show of Morning Edition, people should listen to Morning Edition sometimes, because, you know, you have a highly produced, well-funded show. However, the form of it is not that difficult to emulate. That is, they're doing short 15-minute segments where they split it up into three or four or five sections, depending, and they're aiming to a person driving a car who wants to get information in the car. And because usually that's where you see the market survey. You know, you talk about market survey, people tend to turn the dial every 3 or 4 minutes if they don't like it. That's what market survey information about radio says. And I just want to add one story about the need to be open. It is mythology in New York that one of the biggest things that Pacifica blew 30 years ago or 40 years ago or 50 years ago, the guys who did the Car Talk show, it's a big success in Boston, they originally came to BAI to ask if they could do it down here, and somebody blew them off. So those kind of – and, you know, who knows what their dumb mentality was, because everybody – you know, car ownership is quite pervasive in the United States. But to spend 2 hours talking about repairing a car, I guess people felt that they should talk about some obscure political issue. But, you know, that's the kind of stuff where we have to be open with the creation of new networks. We have to be open. We don't know who's going to come walking through the door with an idea like that. And that I don't have to tell you, that's one of the most popular shows in national public radio, period, ever. Or, non-commercial radio, ever. My feeling is all the time we have to create an openness so that if somebody comes through the door, we don't know who it is. When we moved to 388 Atlantic Avenue, there was these kids coming in from down the street. They wanted to DJ. Now, Kathy knows it's almost impossible, Zula, to have somebody come walking off the street to, you know, immediately put them on the air. But at the same time, I thought, like, well, what talent could be here? Who the hell knows if some young teenager comes walking in, how skilled or talented they are? And that's where we're not, you know, that's where I think we're missing the boat with these kind of things. You know, who knows when energy's going to come walking through the door
that we don't know about. And that's where I think we have to be a little more creative and open-minded about doing a podcast kind of thing. You know, putting rigid structures in right away, yes, we have to figure out a way to do it, but we have to be flexible in doing it. And we have to also remember that we're moving into a situation where we don't know much about how it is, and all these big juggernauts of walking in there trying to take it over. That's why I think we have to sort of – I agree we have to sort of slow step, but we also have to fast step with a lot of advice. So I hope the next committee, we bring in some of these people from these big operations and have them talk about what they think is going on and what they think they could – what they think we could do, you know?
Okay.
Yes.
So Jim, can you put another meeting on the calendar
all right,
for
2 weeks? 2 weeks from now,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grace?
That was good. Yes. I don't have anything further to say. I mean, I do. I could talk all night, but I don't have to.
Well, that's good. But you're concurring
with having
Jim's comment.
2 weeks?
No, with whatever it was Jim was saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
that sounds good.
Well, Kathy, let me just say one last thing. I'm around a lot of smart young people. I'm around a lot of smart young people all the time. And I'm about ready to ask somebody, you know, not only for board stuff, but I'm about ready to ask some young people. I was around three people this weekend who are doing podcasts themselves. And they're all activists, and they all were brilliant. And I'm saying to myself, well, you know, so all I'm saying is that there's lots of things we could work with young people-wise. You know, we just haven't been willing to do, or not willing to do, or we're not seizing the moment or seizing the time, as they used to say.
That's no, we have young people packing premiums. I agree with what you're saying, and I also believe that potentially a Pacifica network on the internet would be competitive with YouTube, because YouTube is very much getting into these days. Political imitation. They exert a lot of power over the people on there, and I think it's likely that Pacifica, if it really has a free speech platform, it would be very unique in the world of online media.
You know, Catherine, actually, I do have a comment.
Okay.
Okay, I don't want to prolong the meeting, but I do have an important comment.
Okay.
Back in 2009, when I was the chair of the board and the IED for 10 months, I had a conversation with John Krigler, our FCC and CPB attorney. And he said that SiriusXM was looking for a progressive channel. And that... you know, if we got it together, we could have Pacifica SiriusXM channel. From time to time, Sirius opens up a channel and, you know, tries to find some organization to fulfill it. But we're actually the only outfit that has enough material to supply a 24-hour left-of-center station for SiriusXM.
Right.
Now, the value of SiriusXM is it gets into all the nooks and crannies that are not served in the United States. It gets into all those red state areas, because that's why people subscribe to SiriusXM. And it's in all the new cars as a, you know, an added feature. And then after your one-year membership or whatever expires, then you have to pay $5 or $6 a month. But if you have nothing in like Bakersfield, just north of L.A., you turn or even in the desert, the Palm Springs area, you turn on the radio, there's nothing except country and western and religious programming and maybe a little bit of other music. There's nothing on the radio dial at all. And but there is Sirius XM where you can get anything. So people in those areas are really craving, and
right.
and there are still a lot of terrestrial listeners out there. So if we could get, the first step I think would be to have a powerful, a national program director who would, and a very well-designed website. So we can have a Pacifica channel, basically, internet radio, with which would be the best of Pacifica. And then once that's formulated and there's some amount of listenership and promotion of it, then offer it to Sirius XM. And then we would really profoundly increase our penetration into society and be much more mm-hmm. relevant. And I think we mm-hmm. could get significant funding for that. I mean, it has to be researched. The information I'm giving you is quite old, 10 years old. But there's still a need for it, and I think it would be terrific.
Well, let me just say something about something that Maxie said. Maxie's not here for me to beat up on him, but he was making a comment about how he was talking about the need to market to a progressive audience. Then he made the comment that, well, look at what NPR does or NYC does. They do to the curious. They market their programming to the curious. Well, I don't agree with that. I think that Pacifica always was marketing their shows to the curious. That's the history of Pacifica. And we have the potential to outdo that part of NYC or NPR. I'm not saying that they do a great job, because they do a good job. But there's all these things they don't do that we could do, and that's where the video and audio streaming channels come in. We could do... Every signal area has all sorts of interesting stuff going on. You talk about Alan Watts. We could be doing things that have to do with... I mean, we could be doing progressive religious programming. We could be getting together an ecumenical body of very hip imams, priests, ministers from all denominations, working together to explore issues that have to do with religion, at the same time criticizing and puncturing the notions that exist that are part of the reactionary use of Christianity, all right? The reactionary use of religion, because there's a huge progressive tradition in every religious tradition that exists in the world, and certainly mm-hmm. Christianity and Islam. And those are things we could be doing in different ways that we don't even think about, to reach out to people, to talk about what is the history of the book of Matthew, what is the history of the book of Mark, or the Gospels, and sit there and seriously talk about them as historical documents, which is how they train people in theological seminaries. I think people would find that interesting. The historical Jesus, what about him? And look at Life of Brian. Life of Brian is going to be shown in a national screening on April 18th. Why can't we take advantage of that? That's one of the greatest satirical films ever done on organized religion. Why doesn't Pacifica get behind that? I bet you remember George Harrison sponsored that movie. That would be something that's easy for us to do, to get behind that effort, to see that, to have that screened everywhere in the United States, and for all the Pacifica stations to get behind it, because that's what's going to happen. It's going to be shown on the 18th of April all throughout the United States. You know, and those are things we don't even think about, because how many people had become a born-again evangelicals in the 1980s as opposed to Marxist-Leninists? That's an obvious question answered. But we never, ever dealt intelligently with how do we prevent people from having these apocalyptic right-wing attitudes towards religion that then gets translated into politics. And if we're going to try to overcome the differences America have, that's something we have to take seriously. And that's right in the mission statement, to create understanding between people about the sources of conflict, right in the mission statement.
All righty.
I strongly agree. That's very, very good points. I think people just the silly reactionary, not silly, but the debates, the political debates, which I listen to and watch. But this type of programming that Jim is mentioning could be very dynamic, and it's different. I think Pacifica in the past, which was much more iconoclastic than it is currently, and I think that was one of the biggest strengths of Pacifica. And we did out here, not Pacifica, but another station, had a very, very popular show called Religion on the Line. And it was about different religious leaders from Southern California on the show debating certain issues. And it was very interesting.
Well, and the other thing before we go, arts drama thing. In our mission statement, everybody ignores the fact that it's committed to the arts. And I run one of the largest read-aloud play groups reading Shakespeare in the United States, okay? Sometimes I've persuaded Bertel to put carts on, but the main thing is that we have these, in each signal area, we have all sorts of artistic communities performing, doing things, and we could further easily work with them in ways that we don't even think of. And we used to in the past, but we don't do it as much as we do. That's basically got disrupted in the 70s, and I think that has to be resuscitated. Anyway.
Okay.
Cliff has one last comment, sort of off
okay,
the edge here. I think that it might be people might want to think of celebrating cannabis on April 20th at 4:20 in the afternoon for an hour or so.
4:20,
well, that's the symbol of cannabis, 4:20. I don't know why it is, but it has been for several years now, both the time and the date.
Okay. I'll keep that in
mind. Why the 20th?
I have no idea. But anyway, it's a thought.
I would be able to celebrate it much better if I had some cannabis to celebrate with.
Come on
well,
out,
we have a week or so.
Come on out.
We have a week or so.
Yeah, I need to make a trip, man. Okay.
I got you. Right on. Great
All
meeting.
Right.
Great meeting. Yay.
Right.
Thank you, Catherine. Catherine, big thank you to Catherine, our chair for the programming committee.
Yeah,
and holding
thank
it
you.
Down. We've got so much done. It's been so inspiring.
Thank you
so much for your commitment this past year. It's been amazing. It's been amazing. Even though I haven't been on
well,
the call.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
Really.
Okay, we are adjourned. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.